This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by CruiserMax Vibrance Beans Seed Treatment from Syngenta for growers interested in using a seed treatment with proven performance against early season insects and diseases. While farmers continue to harvest east of the Mississippi and deal with some far from ideal field conditions west of the river and in Wisconsin, the rest of the world just kind of keeps churning ahead. It's time to get back to some basics. Let's talk about the Farm Bill.
From the studios of Farm Journal Broadcast, this is AgriTalk, agriculture's national talk show since 1994. Here's your host, Chip Flory.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us again this morning. Welcome to AgriTalk. We got a harvest update from USDA yesterday afternoon, and the Western Corn Belt saw very slow progress in the week ended October 14. Guys in the Eastern Belt made some impressive progress, but impressive probably is not the way to describe progress on negotiating a compromise on the 2018 Farm Bill. It's still mired in a conference committee. We've got two members of the Farm Bill Conference Committee on today's show, Representative Colin Peterson from Minnesota, ranking member of the House Ag Committee, will join us in the next segment. We'll talk Farm Bill with the congressman. But I also want to hear what Representative Peterson thinks about progress on E15 and the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement. And at the end of the show, Congressman Glenn G.T. Thompson from Pennsylvania will join us. GT is the chair of the Nutrition Subcommittee in the House Ag Committee. It's going to be interesting to hear what Congressman Thompson thinks about the lack of progress on reaching a compromise on the Farm Bill. And then sandwiched in between the two lawmakers, we're going to talk with Andy Lucas. Andy is the information director for the Georgia Farm Bureau. It was a big day in Georgia yesterday. And we'll get Andy's take on the damage caused in his state by Hurricane Michael. All right, right now let's turn it over to Tyne Morgan, get an update on the news. Tyne, how are you this morning?
Hey, I'm good, Chip, and that's actually our lead today. President Donald Trump toured Georgia yesterday surveying the damage from Hurricane Michael, and the vice president is there today along with Ag Secretary Sonny Perdue. So a big day in Georgia. That's as farmers in the Southeast deal with the aftermath of Hurricane Michael. Losses are now pegged at the $1.3 billion mark. It's cotton, peanuts, poultry that look to be hit the hardest. Only about 15% of Georgia's cotton crop was harvested before the hurricane hit. Now, the Georgia Department of Agriculture is estimating more than 2 million chickens were also lost in the state. Now, it's more than just Georgia. There's other states that are seeing the impacts of this, too. Frank Howie is a farmer in North Carolina. He was actually top producer of the year last year. Those producers pummeled with severe weather this year, Chip. Hurricane Michael was the second hurricane to hit this year. He says 6 to 7 inches of rain fell on already saturated soils with that system last week, saturated from Hurricane Florence that hit just a month earlier.
There was still corn being harvested and early soybeans being harvested. We got up to 22 inches out of that storm, which, you know, caused a lot of damage to the corn and soybeans that were ready for harvest. We got 60, 70 mile hour winds here.
And Chip, that was 150 miles from the coast, not even right on the coast. And so they're dealing with cleanup there. But from flooding to drought, the Utah governor is now declaring a state of emergency due to drought in his state. Recent rains have helped, but not near enough to wipe drought off the map or restore depleted reservoirs. Officials say 16 of Utah's top 49 reservoirs are less than 20% full. 29 counties are now under the emergency declaration. An updated U.S. drought monitor will come out Thursday, but the most recent map shows the entire state of Utah seeing drought. 27% is in extreme drought. That actually last week, that showed a 19-point improvement in the extreme drought category. So things are improving, but nowhere where they need to be, hence why that emergency declaration was made. Well, Chip, more African swine fever cases are being reported in China, with the number of cases now climbing over 30. One farm calling 20,000 pigs due to a suspected case of ASF. And now one outbreak at a farm is being linked to China's top animal feed maker. That's Beijing Dabeinong Technology Group. That's according to China's Securities Journal, which is a state-owned publication. But do you want to know what's interesting here, Chip? So that company, Beijing, the Beidong Technology Group. That's the same company whose employees were sentenced to prison for stealing seed secrets in Iowa from DuPont, Pioneer, and Monsanto. Remember Mo Heilong? He was employed by the group from 2001 to 2009 and in charge of its research project management. So just, I mean, they're a large company, so I'm not making any correlations here. Yeah. I'm just saying that's interesting that they are the ones that they think is linked to this extreme spread in China, that feed maker. So
wow.
Yeah. So anyway, just a little connection there. But on the vaccine front, Chip, in the U.S., USDA is set to approve a vaccine license for African swine fever virus. USDA's Agriculture Research Service says it intends to approve a license for Zoetis to market its vaccine for the virus. And that's really, you know, as this hits home with, okay, that outbreak's going on there. We don't have it here yet, but what if it would hit? What if it would come to the U.S.? What can we do? And so it takes a while to get one of those vaccines approved, get a vaccine created, get it approved. But hopefully, hopefully that is in the works.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Hopefully it is in the works. Tyne, I was going to ask you a question. Do you think we've scratched the surface on figuring out just how widespread ASF is in China?
Oh my gosh. I mean, I think you would be more to know than I am, but it seems like now there's being more cases, not fewer cases being reported. And it seems like they just don't have a handle. And there's been some rumors going around on what exactly caused it to get into the country in the first place. But I'm hearing, and Clinton Griffiths and I were talking yesterday, hearing that because they're sourcing less pork from some countries due to trade issues and things that they were actually sourcing some supplies from countries like Africa and some other countries that maybe that's how the disease got in. So how severe is it? You know, when you look at the scheme of things, we're like 20,000 pigs culled. That's a lot. But we know that, you know, it's a very large hog supplies in China.
Yeah, there are some alternatives to their supply chain that they had established, but those alternatives may have come with a risk, and ASF may be part of that risk.
Exactly.
Thank you so much, Tyne.
Thanks, Chip.
All right, let's bring in Mike Opperman, editor of Farm Journal's Milk. Mike, welcome to AgriTalk.
Oh, thanks, Chip. Good to talk.
You bet. Hey, our dairy exports, we've got some tariffs in place, but our dairy exports are still pretty good, aren't they?
Yeah, you know, last month I think we were up 14% over a year earlier. So 14% is still good. It's off a little bit from trend line, you know, through the earlier part of the year. And we're starting to see, we're starting to be able to get results from impact of the tariffs. And that's what's really kind of knocked exports down a little bit. So we know, you know, we had tariffs imposed by Mexico and China earlier in the year. Mexico is mostly on cheese. China was mostly on powdered goods, and it looks like those products affected by tariffs are off down about 33% on a year-over-year basis. Okay. Now that sounds like a lot, but you know, wherever there's a void, that void gets filled pretty quickly. So we've been able to shift those products into other areas. The powder that has been affected going into China, we've been able to sell a lot of that into Southeast Asia. Now, where that ends up after it goes to Southeast Asia is anybody's guess. But so we've been able to offset a little bit of that. And the cheese going into Mexico that's kind of dropped off, we've been able to replace that with powder. So as I've said before, you know, trade issues, you know, where we might fall off in one area, it seems like another country or another part of the world picks up. And it looks like that's what's happening with these exports. So
yeah, that's very cool. And it's good to be moving some more powder into Mexico, isn't it?
It is. You know, we haven't done that much in the past, so it's good to see that product happening.
Absolutely. All right, Mike, we will talk with you again soon. That is Mike Opperman, editor of Farm Journal's Milk. We've got a big show for you. Coming up next, we've got Representative Colin Peterson from Minnesota. We're going to be talking about E15, USMCA, and of course, we'll get to the Farm Bill with Representative Peterson next on AgriTalk.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success. Like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
Control your destiny in a challenging dairy industry at Farm Journal Media's Milk Business Conference, November 5th through the 7th in Las Vegas. Walk away with a competitive edge from insights on market trends and innovative ideas to optimize your dairy business. Register today to network with fellow dairy owners at milkbusinessconference.com. Growers face enough worries today. SDS and nematodes shouldn't be among them. Alevo seed treatment from BASF is the only product that offers effective protection against both SDS and nematodes throughout the critical growing period. Growers get amazing early season protection for stronger profit potential at harvest. So worry about weather. Don't worry about SDS or nematodes with Alevo. To find out more about Alevo and how to protect your soybeans, talk to your seed dealer or your BASF rep. Grow smart with BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
Prepare for the future of ag technology at Farm Journal Media's Ag Tech Expo, December 3rd through the 5th in Indianapolis. Whether you're a novice or a tech-savvy early adapter, Ag Tech is your go-to source for the latest in the industry. Customize your event experience and gain a competitive edge with more than 25 educational breakout sessions focused on precision ag, using data, machinery and iron, and sustainable technology. Grower and retailer registrations only $99. Sign up today at www.farmjournalagtechexpo.com.
Steve Gohm, product lead for soybean seed care at Syngenta, joins us. Steve, we're planting soybeans earlier. How important is it to use a seed treatment to protect your soybeans from early season diseases?
It's very important. Like I've said before, I mean, there's a heavy investment that happens with seed nowadays, and protecting it is critically important. And we have a portfolio of seed treatments across a lot of crops, Cruiser Max Vibrant suite of products. That's not only going to give you protection, but it's going to give you the rooting power of Vibrance and the Cruiser Vigor effect, which at the end of the day not only protects the seed, but it's going to give you more yield at the end of the season.
Yeah, and you're risking a lot if you don't protect it.
Yeah, we're trying to get growers to really look at seed treatments more as investments than costs, and so that return on investment is certainly there with our seed treatment portfolio.
And Syngenta recommends using Cruiser Max Vibrance Beans seed treatment to protect your soybeans from early season diseases during the critical early growth stage. That was Steve Gohm, soybean seed care product lead at Syngenta.
I'm Andrew McCray, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, farmer-focused podcast that's all about production agriculture. Farming the Countryside is available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts and is brought to you by Nutrien Ag Solutions, the world's largest provider of crop inputs and services.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. I'm your host, Chip Flory. I'm excited about today's show. We've got some great guests, including Congressman Colin Peterson, representing Minnesota's 7th District. Congressman Peterson, welcome back to AgriTalk. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Hey, we're doing just fine. We've got the snow out of here. I kind of figure you probably still got some snow up there in western Minnesota, don't you?
No. Most of it's melted.
Good.
I was down in, down in southwestern Minnesota up on the Buffalo Ridge.
Yeah.
Sunday, they still had quite a bit of snow that they had gotten overnight, and because of the high elevation, they still have the snow. Up here, it's pretty much melted.
Well, good. Just to make sure that everybody is aware of this, Congressman Peterson founded the Congressional Biofuels Caucus, and he's co-chair of the caucus, and I'd say that his caucus got a win with President Trump's support for year-round availability of E15, but Congressman, just because the president is supporting E15 doesn't mean that the process is complete. What's the next step here?
Well, you know, they've got to get the rules in place. We expect, my biggest concern at this point is that we're going to be sued by the oil industry and others that are going to tie this thing up for a while. But it's a step in the right direction. We've been trying to figure out if there's some way that we can, you know, get a compromise with the opponents and see if we can move forward in a logical way, but it doesn't seem like that's possible. You know, I don't know why we're fighting so much over, you know, it's actually a small difference in the marketplace, but, that's where we're at. So we're hoping that, you know, it's going to be, the biggest effect will be next summer if we're able to, you know, to have E15 available, you know, all summer.
Right.
But we still have problems because even if E15 is okayed, a lot of places we don't have the infrastructure in place to deliver it, you know, so that's another issue.
Yep. It's going to take a long time to see an impact in the marketplace here, but it's worth the fight. I don't think there's any question about that. Is it going to take some legislation to kind of instruct EPA on what they should be doing here?
Well, that's what we think and we'd like to do, but it's tough to get anything legislatively done because of the opposition, especially in the Senate. So we're going to try, you know, and that would be the best if we could get something solid through the Congress and get it in place. But, you know, getting anything through the Senate is a difficult situation.
Yes. Yeah, no question about that. And that includes the Farm Bill. Let's jump over there. Congressman Peterson is the ranking member of the House Ag Committee, obviously on the Farm Bill Conference Committee. Give us a status update, Congressman. Is there any progress being made?
Yeah, our staff is working, you know, every day on every title. We've got three of those titles pretty much done, and we're making progress, but it's slow. It's slower than I would like to see it, but, you know, we came out of our last face-to-face meeting united with a strategy, and that is to get this stuff wrapped up over the next few weeks so that we've got a bill drafted, scored, and ready to go the week after we get back from the election, which is the second week after the election. So that's the plan. We're not there yet. We're still hung up on some stuff in the commodity title, still some hung up on some of the conservation stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously the SNAP issue, which doesn't seem to be getting really any place significant. And, you know, people need to understand that whatever you think about this, and I mean, I'm for people working. I was in the White House when we put the work requirements in 1996. The biggest problem is that the waivers that have been given out, including by this administration, has given waivers on a good part of the country since they've been in office, in spite of the fact that they claim that they want people to work. So there were some changes in the House bill in waivers. But they mixed them in with adding people 50 to 60 into the process. So, you know, what people need to understand is the House bill has no chance of going anyplace in the Senate because of these SNAP provisions. The Senate bill, you know, can't pass the House without Democrats.
Right.
And the Democrats are not going to support most, you know, the urban Democrats are not going to support the changes in the SNAP. So what we need is a bill that'll garner 10, 15 Democrats in the Senate and, you know, 70 to 100 Democrats in the House. And that's where we need to get if we're going to get a bill that's going to pass.
Gotcha. Now, on the commodity title, what about the proposed changes to the ARC and the PLC in the House and the Senate bills? Do you support any of those changes? And if you do, what are they?
Yeah, I support, you know, we're trying to, in the ARC program, we're trying to solve this problem where one county gets payments and the next county doesn't. So that's relatively inexpensive. We want to give people the option to be able to move from ARC to PLC and vice versa. So there's some kind of fine-tuning, if you will, in those programs that I support, and I think all of us support. That's not really what's holding that up. What the issue is trying to add this new drought provision.
Yeah.
Which says that if you have a D4 drought for 20 weeks or more, then you can update your base acres. You know, that in my part of the world, there's no such thing as a 20-week drought.
Yeah.
Generally, you know, especially a D4 drought. So
exactly.
You know, so it's skewed. It's about $600 million skewed to the south, basically. Mm-hmm. Which I'm, you know, it's not in the whole scheme of things. It's not a huge amount of money, but some people are concerned about it. And I think what I'm more worried about now is that what's happened with this hurricane.
Yeah.
I think you're going to see when we get back after the election a lot of pressure from members that are in that hurricane area to try to add something either to the farm bill or to the appropriations or something to try to deal with that, that could potentially give us more problems to solve than we already have. So we'll just have to see how that plays out.
Okay. Would you rather have, and I think it's well known that you're leaning more toward the Senate bill than towards the House bill, but would you rather have the Senate bill or an extension of the current bill, the Congressman?
Well, I want to get a new bill. That's what I want to get. I don't want to talk about an extension. You know, the Senate bill I can live with.
Okay.
The main reason is because they've made some pretty significant changes in SNAP in the Senate bill, and they've got bipartisan support for that. And the reason that I favor the Senate bill is because it's something that's pretty close to what can actually get done.
Gotcha.
You know, with the House, passing a partisan bill passed with only Republicans because of these SNAP provisions. And people need to understand, it's kind of this myth out there that nobody's working. You know, we've had work requirements since 1996.
Yep.
You know, that's not the problem. You know, the problem is that the way the system has been operated, it doesn't work. And what people need to understand, we had 23 hearings in the House on the SNAP program out of 110 Farm Bill hearings. So a number of things were brought up in those hearings of needed the things that should be changed, things that could be improved, and so forth. Do you think anything that was brought up in those 23 hearings ended up in the bill? No. What ended up was zero. So what's in the bill, did that ever come up in any of those 23 hearings? No. It's 100% brought in from outside without anything being brought up in any of those hearings. That's the problem. And if you want to get this bill done, you know, you've got to get to reality of what the Senate can do. And Pat Roberts is just as adamant against what the House has done with SNAP as Debbie Stabenow is, or I am.
Yeah.
You know, and they try to, you know, it's just not going to happen. So this is a welfare reform bill that they put through the House.
Okay,
so you want to have a welfare reform bill, or do you want to have a farm bill? That's really what it's about.
Gotcha. Congressman, I wish we could have gotten to some trade issues. I'd like to get you on so that we can talk about USMCA and some of the other trade issues out there. We'll do that again as soon as we can, okay?
That sounds good.
All right, that is Representative Colin Peterson from Minnesota. We've got Andy Lucas, Georgia Farm Bureau, up next.
It's Digging Deeper with the Mosaic Company, the show where two agronomy experts take your questions about crop nutrition. Here are your hosts, Kurt Woolfolk and Ross Bender, senior agronomists from the Mosaic Company.
Hi, this is Kurt.
And this is Ross. And today we're answering the questions you sent us on social media.
This one comes in from Twitter. What's the best product on the market for boosting sulfur levels?
Boosting sulfur levels in a soil is actually a fairly difficult task, so we need to find a source that can keep it available for longer.
MicroEssentials with Fusion Technology contains two forms of sulfur, sulfate sulfur for early season crop needs, and elemental sulfur that takes time over the growing season for season-long sulfur availability to that plant.
Today, what we know is that our crops not only need greater quantities of nutrients, they need to be available for longer, and any practice you can use to keep that available for longer will help. MicroEssentials is a tool in the toolbox to help you do that.
Have any questions you want Kurt and Ross to tackle? Tweet to us at MicroEssentials on Twitter or send us a message on Facebook. And to learn more about smart crop nutrition, visit microessentials.com.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady joins us now. Brian, we got off to a bang of a start yesterday for the week. Today, setting back a little bit. What's going on?
Well, I think, Chip, nothing more than just some profit-taking at this point in time. You mentioned the big rally yesterday, and pulling back now, we're seeing 9 to 10 cent losses in the soybean market, about 3 cents, 4 cents lower in corn. Pulling back from those gains that we saw yesterday and just kind of catching our breath a little bit here.
Yeah, and it's some great domestic usage numbers coming out of the soy industry yesterday and those crush numbers, right?
Yeah, NOPA crush well above what was anticipated, record large for the month, and very strong start to the new marketing year there on the crush pace. It looks like the downtime came in August, even though it wasn't as much downtime as normal.
Gotcha. Not a lot happening in wheat trade right now.
No, actually, we're seeing a little bit of a firmer tone in nearby SRW contracts. Slight losses in HRW and spring wheat futures so far this morning. So pretty quiet relative to the corn and soybean markets.
Yeah, dollar plus gains in the nearby lean hog futures.
Yeah, the hog market is the one that is kind of bucking the trend in terms of pulling back from yesterday's gains. Good strong start here to the day especially in the winter month contracts. Those are leading the way to the upside so far.
ASF helping us out there?
Yes, I think that's definitely coming into play. The discount that December futures hold to the cash index is also in play. Unfortunately, we are seeing a little bit of price pressure in the cattle market this morning after yesterday's gains.
All right, Brian Grady's going to be with me this afternoon on ATV along with Pro Farmer Senior Market Analyst Jeff Wilson.
Hi, I'm Ag Day host Clinton Griffiths, and I invite you to join me each morning as we cover the nation's food system, from fields of green to orchards of orange and livestock everywhere in between. America runs on agriculture, and here at Ag Day, agriculture's what we do best. Listen as our analysts track the markets, learn about innovations in technology and sustainability, and live the country lifestyle through the eyes of rural America. Join me, Clinton Griffiths, for Ag Day, the country experience.
Find it now at shopfarmjournal.com. Brand new to the shop is The Best of Tractor Tales, as seen each week on U.S. Farm Report. This 2-DVD set features dozens of classic machines and the collectors who bring them back to life. You'll get one DVD that's all green, The Best of John Deere. The second DVD includes classics like Alice Chalmers and many more. Buy one DVD for $29.95 or buy the set for $49.95. Order today at shopfarmjournal.com or call toll-free 877-847-9599. You can find it now at shopfarmjournal.com.
Your next piece of equipment is on machinerypeat.com. Search equipment from dealerships across the country to find what you're looking for. Only on machinerypeat.com.
And welcome back to AgriTalk, everyone. I'm your host, Chip Flory. We just talked about it very briefly with Congressman Peterson from Minnesota about some of the issues that we are dealing with in the Southeast U.S. because of not one but two major storms that rolled through the area. Andy Lucas is the information director for the Georgia Farm Bureau. He joins us now. Andy, welcome to AgriTalk. How are you today?
I am well. Thanks for the call, Chip.
You bet. You bet. Boy, I realize that you guys are dealing with a lot down there, but what a day yesterday was with Secretary Perdue and President Trump in the state. Today, I believe you've got Vice President Pence in the state today as well. Is that right?
Yeah, that is correct. He is down in South Georgia as we speak. I think it just speaks to the condition that we're faced with as far as our crop damage throughout the state, as far as in cotton, pecans, peanuts, and then the fall vegetables, as well as the timber. We're certainly grateful for the administration reaching out early to come assess their own damage just through their observation, and so they can see it firsthand.
Yeah. Were you with the tour yesterday?
We were touring, but we were not at the same place at the same time.
Gotcha.
The state of Georgia is quite large.
Yep.
And so we were by SUV, and certainly they were in the skies, so they could move a lot faster than we could.
Yes, they could. So, Andy, tell us about it. Just how bad is it down there?
For us, I think farm family lives will be changed forever by this storm. It couldn't have come at a worse time. You know, in Georgia, this is the season of harvest. October is a heavy production month for cotton. We were really just getting geared up to harvest cotton. Some reports indicate we were somewhere around 15 to 20% complete. And so the winds have just stripped a lot of the stalks. It's early to make some assessments, but I can tell you in the fields that I were in, that I was in yesterday, big tracts of land, big acreage. You could just look across and you could just see white carpet, and that wasn't carpet. That was cotton on the ground. They'll be having to do some assessments. We also, you know, we're a pretty good sized poultry state. We had some damage as well to the poultry houses. Some reports indicate about 100 had some type of a damage to the structure. The pecan orchards, you can just see trees turned over, mature trees, just kind of pushed to the side through the storm. So pecans were really just beginning to be harvested as well. Mm-hmm. Sweet corn, which we do as well. We do some fall vegetables, peppers and those type products, tomatoes. It just, you know, whether it damaged the stalk, the vine, or turned the fruit upside down, and so then it got blistered by the sun. We're worried about conditions for our peanuts. Our peanuts, we were probably somewhere around 50% complete harvest. The rainfall for Georgia in a year on an annual basis is somewhere around 50 inches. Most of the time, October's a dry month for us. We'll see anywhere between 2 to 3 inches. Well, this storm brought 5 inches of rain on top of the peanuts that were close to harvest. So there'll be some grade issues as well with that.
You know, Andy, you're talking about crops that if there's a problem on the production side, it doesn't take very long for that to be reflected in at the retail level because of a slowdown in supply of the of what you guys produce down there.
That's correct. You know, I think you'll see a little jump as far as in grocery prices as we move forward in some of these products that we produce. You know, we're all real close to the grocery store, and that grocery store only has just a short supply of inventory, and so the mechanism that we use here in Georgia is that just in time. And, you know, I'm afraid those commodities that we were always proud to produce and harvest and get in that food channel, we're going to come up short here in Georgia.
Yeah. Yeah. And you mentioned tomatoes, and I just want to make clear because there's a difference between processing tomatoes and slicing tomatoes for the table. And Georgia is a big producer of those slicing tomatoes or table tomatoes, right?
That's correct. We, you know, vegetables, you know, sometimes get overshadowed here in Georgia, but we've got a strong presence of fruit and vegetable growers based out around the Tifton area. And that's where that storm just kind of wreaked havoc through there. And, you know, any of those small vegetables, you know, if a tree has a hard time withstanding the wind, you know, peppers and squash and tomatoes, you know, they're just not going to make it.
Yep. And then cotton, I mean, Georgia's second biggest cotton producing state in the country. This has got a potential to have an impact on that market as well.
Yeah, we've always been proud to hold that honor. You know, we have a lot of acreage. And, you know, with the breadbasket of Georgia and where that storm just kind of run up that channel, it certainly impacted those cotton growers. And the thing that I would add to you, Chip, is, you know, this was one of those seasons where we had timely rainfall. Yeah. And, you know, this was hopefully going to be that bumper crop that turned some farmers into, you know, a little bit more paying off some things that they owe and, you know, kind of get it on the upspin for them because, you know, those farm commodity prices have been suppressed so long and it's tough to make ends meet here in Georgia.
Right. But, Andy, you know, as soon as we talk about crop losses, you know that there's a segment that is listening right now that says, well, but you've got crop insurance, right?
Yeah, I've done a couple interviews already today, and that question comes up you know, relatively quick. And, you know, you can afford X amount as a producer, and once you hit that amount, you know, you're still almost at a break-even point. You know, crop insurance may help some of the cotton producers, but they're still going to go in the hole. I mean, they put the efforts, they put the inputs in this cotton crop, and you know, we were hoping for higher yields, you know, from county yields. Some of the farms that I was at yesterday, I saw pictures, and, you know, I'm not a crop economist or anything like that, but I can look at the crop itself and say, you know, there were a lot of bowls on there, a lot of open bowls, and you could just almost anticipate 1,600 pound cotton.
Yep.
And when you go from 1,600 pound cotton, you got your input cost in it to nothing.
Right.
You know, no crop insurance is going to help offset that.
That's right. Yeah, nobody gets rich collecting on crop insurance. What did survive, Andy? What escaped Hurricane Michael?
You know, we go from the barrier islands of the Atlantic Ocean all the way up to the Blue Ridge. And so, you know, when you got to central Georgia, mm-hmm. which is, you know, a good 2.5-3 hours from the Florida-Georgia line, you still had 50-mile-an-hour winds. We had producers here in the central part of the state, you know, that the cotton was strung out as well, not as heavily damaged on pecans. And we still grow some acreage of cotton, you know, above Macon here, which is a central part of the state.
Yeah.
But, you know, in those production counties that we rely on that kind of makes us number one, number two, and like a lot of us journalists like to talk about and hold to pride, those were the counties that was hit the worst.
Right.
So there'll be production here in the state. I think it'd be more on the east side of the state. We've got pecans over there, and we've got cotton, but all of them suffered winds as well.
Sure, sure. And you mentioned one that, honestly, Andy, I hadn't given any thought, the timber. That's another one that can show up and be reflected in prices to consumers very quickly.
Absolutely. You know, next time you're at Home Depot or Lowe's, whichever your choice is of those type products, you certainly could see it. We had tracts of land that, as the wind pushed through, those southern pines just snapped.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a resiliency here in the state of Georgia with our producers. They have a spirit about them. I can tell you they're on the ropes. They really are. We had a session on Sunday at a farmer's market, kind of in Cordele, if any of your viewers out there know. I know you've got a Tifton base audience, and a lot of those that's probably listening to your show now was some of the 300 and 400 farmers that came over there to listen to Secretary Perdue, as well as our Commissioner Gary Black, and they were looking for a message of hope, and I think through prayer and a lot of things, we realized that the solutions were going to come slow. And this is going to be a thing that's going to be facing Georgia farmers, not just today, tomorrow, but as well as next year when they start making those determinations of what they're going to buy, what they're going to seed, and how they're going to pay for what they got this year.
Andy, real quick, what does the state need now to help in that recovery process?
I think the thing that we need the most is prayer, Chip. There's ways that you can support the Georgia farmers. You can go to gfb.org. They've got a foundation for ag out there. You can land on that. The Georgia Cattlemen's is also, if you're wanting to help livestock producers here in the state, you can go to Georgia Cattlemen's and you can make some contributions there. But, Chip, I think as a country and as a state, we need prayers more than we need anything.
Andy, you said something early on here that really touched me. Farm family lives will be changed forever. So you know that we're sending our prayers down to Georgia and trying to lift you guys up and give you the strength to face this challenge head on.
Thank you, Chip, for your time.
You bet. You bet. That is Andy Lucas, Information Director, Georgia Farm Bureau. My goodness gracious, they are dealing with a situation down in the southeast part of the country right now. And like Representative Peterson said, there's going to be a call for some help, some disaster aid to head down to the southeast. Coming up next, we're going to talk with Congressman Glenn Thompson from Pennsylvania.
Find it now at ShopFarmJournal.com. Brand new to the shop is The Best of Tractor Tales, as seen each week on U.S. Farm Report. This 2-DVD set features dozens of classic machines and the collectors who bring them back to life. You'll get one DVD that's all green, The Best of John Deere. The second DVD includes classics like Alice Chalmers and many more. Buy one DVD for $29.95 or buy the set for $49.95. Order today at ShopFarmJournal.com or call toll-free 877-847-9599. You can find it now at ShopFarmJournal.com.
All right, crew, let's get her dug.
Honey, you want to give me a hand? I'm planting that tree, remember?
No matter how large or small your digging project may be, no matter how urban or rural, you must always call 811 before any digging project. 811 is our national one-call number, alerting your local utility companies to come out and mark any lines they have near your dig site. You must call 811 at least 2 to 3 business days before any digging project, so you can avoid hitting our essential buried utilities. This includes natural gas and petroleum pipelines, electric, communication cables, and water and sewer lines. So before you do this or this, make sure you do this. For digging projects big or small, make the call to 811. Brought to you by Common Ground Alliance.
Prepare for the future of ag technology at Farm Journal Media's Ag Tech Expo, December 3rd through the 5th in Indianapolis. Whether you're a novice or a tech-savvy early adapter, Ag Tech is your go-to source for the latest in the industry. Customize your event experience and gain a competitive edge with more than 25 educational breakout sessions focused on precision ag, using data, machinery and iron, and sustainable technology. Grower and retailer registrations only $99. Sign up today at www.farmjournalagtechexpo.com.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success. Like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
Prepare for the future of ag technology at Farm Journal Media's Ag Tech Expo, December 3rd through the 5th in Indianapolis. Whether you're a novice or a tech-savvy early adapter, Ag Tech is your go-to source for the latest in the industry. Customize your event experience and gain a competitive edge with more than 25 educational breakout sessions focused on precision ag, using data, machinery and iron, and sustainable technology. Grower and retailer registrations only $99. Sign up today at www.farmjournalagtechexpo.com.
Welcome to No Man's Land, a new podcast from U.S. Farm Report host Tyne Morgan.
Bacon is the gateway for a lot of people who are vegetarian.
That has to sink into our listeners. Bacon is the gateway meat.
I invite you to join me each week as I shine a spotlight on powerful women in agriculture while empowering all women in agriculture, going where no man has gone before.
No Man's Land with Tyne Morgan is available where you access your favorite podcasts, iTunes, Google Play, and now the new AgriTalk app.
We're live on the red carpet, waiting for the next generation Credenz soybean. There he is.
Oh, Ed, look, it's Credenz Liberty Link GT27.
I know, Adna. He's got elite genetics.
You gotta love his 4 bushel per acre yield advantage.
And he's both Liberty and glyphosate herbicide tolerant.
Definitely the year's hottest performer. Ask your Credenz retailer about the new Credenz Liberty Link GT27 soybeans.
Grow smart with BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
Back pain doesn't take vacations. It never celebrates holidays. It's on the job 24/7 to keep your life exactly where it is, in limbo. But it doesn't have to be that way, because Laser Spine Institute can help you take back your life from chronic neck and back pain. With a less than 1-inch incision, our minimally invasive procedures have provided relief to over 60,000 patients with a 97% patient satisfaction rate. So get ready to stand tall and live the life you've imagined for yourself without pain. Are you or a loved one suffering from a bulging disc, herniated disc, spinal stenosis, pinched nerve, or degenerative disc disease? Call our spine care consultants now at
855-498-BACK.
For a no-cost MRI review and to learn more, it's time to say goodbye to chronic neck and back pain.
Call 855-498-BACK to see if laser spine surgery is right for you. That's 855-498-BACK.
What have you got to lose? Laser Spine Institute, the leader in minimally invasive spine surgery.
New Dallaro fungicide for corn and soybeans can help you achieve personal best yields.
And welcome back to AgriTalk, everyone. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Let's jump right to it. We've got Congressman Glenn G.T. Thompson on the line with us. Congressman, welcome back to AgriTalk.
Hey, Chip, glad to be back with you. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
You bet. Everyone, just to make it clear, Congressman Thompson represents Pennsylvania's 5th District. And Congressman, just full disclosure here, just want to make sure that you know that Congressman Peterson was on in the first segment of today's show. I'm sure that you've probably got a pretty good idea of what he said. But what I found encouraging was his comment that the committee leaders, Roberts and Stabenow from the Senate, Conaway and Peterson from the House, that they are committed to reaching a compromise bill and to vote on the bill perhaps as soon as the first week after the elections. Is that kind of your read on the situation, Congressman?
Well, I sure hope so. I've been very frustrated in how the, unfortunately, my friends across the aisle, and I do consider many of them in the House committee very good friends that we've worked together on. We've done just a record number of hearings on these topics, and the things that we heard from the agriculture industry, from food banks, from folks who are struggling for poor, hungry families, are the types of things that we put into the House version of the Farm Bill. But we really do want to get this done. It needs to get done. But I do find you can't negotiate with yourself, and that almost seems like what's going on here. Now, politically, I get it. Unfortunately, there's an election coming up here, in short order, and I guess delay is a good tactic for Democrats who hope to retake the House, but it really should never put politics before our farm and ranch families. It really has become a political football for Democrats who, it's been a my way or the highway approach to legislating. And so I am hopeful that we can get past that attitude. There's a lot on the line here with our agriculture, our ranch and farm families, poor, hungry families that deserve a shot at ultimate food security through one of the more than 7 million jobs that are open and available today. Yeah, that's what a big part of the Farm Bill, as we all know, is about food security. And the only ultimate food security comes from a good-paying family-sustaining job.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of truth right there, Congressman. So what's it going to take? What's it going to take to get to a compromise?
I don't know. I'm hoping that this lack of action, we're able to break through that. I know there's a lot of tools that you use at politics times when it comes to winning elections. I never thought the Farm Bill would be one of those, though. This is the first I've ever, in my short time, I've been here 5 terms, 10 years, I've seen that happen. So I'm hopeful in the shadow of this election that, those who are using this as a political tool, just let it go. Use all the other tools you have to see whose side wins what elections. I get that part. We have those elections once every 2 years in the House and every 6 years in the Senate. Really it's time to focus on the needs of those folks who work so hard, sometimes 7 days a week, to provide us with our food and our fiber and our energy resources. And it's one thing I never thought we would have this kind of disagreement. Things like the Title I, to really want to take away the support for our production agriculture. In exchange, I understand with the ranking member, Mrs. Stabenow, who's really pushing like rooftop gardens, as wants to more support there, less support for Title I. The forestry title, which I chaired that subcommittee for 6 years, and we've done great things. The forest products industry, is that part of agriculture, is really booming right now. It's amazing because we're hurting for a while. With the last Farm Bill, we were able to do some really good things for them, and this current title just builds on the success that we've had, that we know that works. There's just a lot of things that I'm surprised that I understand that we're kind of getting bogged down in the mud. And so it's time to get on dry land, dry ground, and to get this thing finished.
That would be great. That would be awesome if we could get it done. USMCA, have you had a chance to review the agreement?
I haven't looked through it. I'm pretty pleased. I love having a president who actually talks about dairy and hardwoods publicly. I don't remember that in my lifetime. And the fact that what he was able to do with getting Canada to back off from the Class 7 milk classification, which obviously is a ultra filtered milk, high value things, and it wasn't just the ability to export into Canada, which I got to tell you impacts Pennsylvania because all those dairy farmers in New York, if they can't sell their milk into Canada, they're going to turn around and sell it in, and flood our markets in Pennsylvania. But it's also what Canada was able to do by creating that protectionism system or extending it with Class 7. It blocked our access into some third world countries. And so I'm just really, really pleased with the results of that. I think it's a great blueprint going forward for the rest of the trade agreements. And I'm just so pleased to have not just a great Secretary of Agriculture in Sonny Perdue, but to have a President, Donald J. Trump, who truly cares and will set as a priority agriculture.
Congressman, real quick, only about 30 seconds here. Did you see any loopholes in the agreement that need to be tightened up?
Not yet, but I'm still going through it.
Okay, very good, very good. And then finally, E15, we need to get behind that and push it, right?
Well, I think it's great for our farmers, obviously, and allowing people to get access to what they want to purchase and making that more readily available, I don't see how that's a bad thing.
Good deal, good deal. Congressman, thank you for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you so much. Thanks for the great work that you do for the number one industry in my state, the state of Pennsylvania. It's much appreciated.
Very good. Very cool. Thank you. That is Representative Glenn G.T. Thompson from Pennsylvania. Thanks for listening today. Thanks to Congressman Colin Peterson and Andy Lucas for joining us. Come back this afternoon for AgriTalk After the Bell. I'll be talking with the guys from Pro Farmer. And tomorrow on AgriTalk, it's a farmer forum. Illinois, Missouri, and North Dakota. Have a great day, everybody.
No matter what you do, you're always raising the bar, trying to do better than ever. New DeLauro fungicide for corn and soybeans can help you get the edge you're looking for. DeLauro has a broader spectrum of disease control and best-in-class dual mode of action residual. Plus, it improves plant health, so your top-performing hybrids and varieties will have the protection they need to help you achieve your personal best yields. DeLauro from Bayer. Keep raising the bar. Always read and follow label instructions.
Go behind the scenes of Ag Day and get straight talk on the issues pushing agriculture. Introducing Farm Sense, a new podcast from Ag Day host Clinton Griffiths.
Join me each week as I go beyond the headlines and get personal. My goal is to take a common sense approach to tackling real life problems. Perspective rooted in my rural upbringing and featuring some of the best minds agriculture has to offer.
Farm Sense with Clinton Griffiths is available where you access your favorite podcast, iTunes, Google Play, and now the new AgriTalk app.
Thanks to Cruiser Max Vibrance Beans Seed Treatment for sponsoring the AgriTalk podcast. Talk to your retailer or Syngenta representative about investing in a turbocharged seed treatment that delivers industry-leading ROI.